Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
This was from Andrew Marchand, who covers all things sports media and writes a lot of good think pieces and content for The Athletic as their senior writer. He says he's talked a lot about standalone games lately. This is thankfully the last of the Monday Night Football doubleheaders. 7 p.m. is too early. 10 p.m. is too late. I know you don't like the 10 p.m. games, but he has a general gripe with standalone games, which I think, number one, the league is going to keep doing more and more of them because the TV ratings are unbelievable. It's just more audience for them. You spread these games out to more days and more times, and it doesn't really matter when you air it. 9 a.m., 9 p.m., people are going to tune in. But in this fantasy football culture where everyone is betting on games and has fantasy players that they're interested in, I think it's pretty clear that people like the standalone games. It lets you watch more football.
You mean the double dip?
I mean standalone games, period.
Oh, I see.
I mean, the breakfast game that you hate is wildly popular in the country.
Yes.
Because it's just more football consumption. Over the course of a Sunday, like the worst thing that happened this weekend in the NFL was that the 1 p.m. window had 10 games. They did everything they could all weekend to build up the Chiefs and the Eagles. So they quite literally only had 3 games in the 4 o'clock window, and they had almost the entire slate Sunday at 1. Well, if you choose one game to watch, or if you're a Lions fan and so you're locked in on Detroit in the 1 o'clock window against the Bears or whatever, you're missing 18 other teams playing that weekend. If you're me and you're a crazy person or you get paid to know about the NFL or whatever, you might go back with NFL Game Pass condensed and over the course of the week watch as many games as you can. But most people are just out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think the trend, I think he's in the minority when he complains about standalone games, when he complains about the staggered Monday Night Football last night specifically. I think this is what people want.
I love the doubleheader. It's delightful. Now, 10 is too late, so that's awful, and I guess that's that. So I can get through competently. You know, thank goodness that game was out of reach for the Raiders. I would stagger it. So I know nobody likes that because, like, you might miss 20 minutes of football or something like that, but I would do the 7 o'clock start and then, like, the 9:15, 9:30 start because I think 10 is just too late for the majority of the country. But the reason I like it this way is Monday night is already a football night. You see what I'm saying? Whereas Sunday morning is not already a football time. 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock, these are football times. These are understood, dedicated football times. Thursday is now part of the furniture. We're all used to it. We know that one is now part of it. So you go Thursday, yes, Monday or Sunday rather, the normal slate. And then Monday, it's already Monday night football. So doing an extra one where one's at 7 or one's at 6:45 and the other's at 9:15, something like that, I'm already dedicating that time and space, and it's part of the work week, sure, so to speak, or part of the football week. So I like that. When you start going, we're going to do Friday at 6:15 a.m. because they're in Brazil or something, that's where you start to lose me and make it more difficult, and it's less fun. But I understand I'm in the minority. You put this thing on TV, you get tens of millions of people to watch.
I just find it fascinating that in so many ways the league prioritizes the consumer and the consumption and the numbers of people that want the standalone activity and just their own betterment. They're not doing it for us. It's not a gift because we like football. They're doing it how they can maximize. But then they will look out for Fox or CBS occasionally on the Sunday differentiation of games. Again, in a week where I think it was 14 games on Sunday, but let's say it's 13 or whatever, to have 10 at 1 and 3 at 4 so that everyone basically locked in on the Eagles and the Chiefs. And they do this for each network a couple times a year with the massive game. It's short-sighted and annoying. That will always be my biggest gripe. And I get Red Zone helps, and Scott Hansen's not going to let you miss anything. And if you're watching Red Zone, you'll see all the touchdowns and a bunch of the turnovers. And that's a great addition to the sports viewing experience. But that's too many games. It should generally be divvied up in some way so that there's always at least four, if not five, games late, and then lesser games at one, so that if it's half and half, you're just seeing more football. It's just math. It's, you know, it breaks it down pretty easily. But the two games last night on Monday night, what a win for the Bucs. And what a job done last night by Todd Bowles, who I have been critical of in the past for his clock management at times. He's had some really bad sequences in the playoffs and elimination games, and just generally has come up small in some huge moments over the years as what is, you know, good program, good coach, I think.
Yep.
Fourth year in a row, the Bucs are 2-0, by the way. Bowles is doing something right.
He can coordinate some defense, man.
He's like, also a great example of two things. One, if you hire a defensive-minded head coach and you have success on offense, you're going to lose your coordinators a lot. That keeps happening. Dave Canales was awesome there. He's the head coach of the Panthers. Liam Cohen is great there. He's the head coach of the Jaguars. And last night, I saw my first big column about their new offensive coordinator, who has Baker Mayfield cooking and is doing a great job. So Baker might be getting a third OC. Yeah.
Josh Grizzard.
Head coaching job in as many years. But Bowles is the mainstay. And as you said, that defense is the key. They give up 19 points in a win last night. But here's why I want to commend him. I thought he was perfect in his management down the stretch last night. They let the Texans score a touchdown with 50 seconds to play in the ball game. 25-yard run by Nick Chubb, hole the size you could driven a golf cart through. Safety, you could tell, not really engaged trying to track him down, kind of half-ass running behind him. And I thought it was really clear. They didn't necessarily go hard on the broadcast, but I thought it was obvious. Oh, they just let him score. They were up by a point. So either you let the Texans in chip shot field goal range now from 42, 43 yards.
Wind it down, kick the field goal to lose.
They're going to kick with a couple seconds left, and you're going to walk into the locker room losing basically 16-14, or you let them score. Now you got to go get a touchdown in 50 seconds, but at least you have the ball, and you get to determine whether you win or lose with your own playmakers. They get the ball back. They go on an 11-play, 80-yard drive over 2 minutes and 4 seconds. So I keep saying 50 seconds. That was how long the scoring drive was. It was 2:10 left when they allowed the touchdown. So they had plenty of time. But anyways, it took almost 2 minutes. They go down the field 80 yards. They score with 6 seconds to play, and they win the game. And the way they handled their timeouts as well was awesome. You know, very much patient initially, kept their timeouts until they needed them. They still had a couple, so they were able to actually run the ball from in near the goal line, which the Texans weren't expecting. So that gave them the touchdown to actually take the lead 20-19. The whole late game plan for the Bucs was flawless, and now they're 2-0, and they play the Jets this week, maybe without Justin Fields, who's
hurt.
There
you go.
New York's not very good. You're looking at a 3-0 start if you handle your business against a bad team.
You want to knock them off the mountain. Good luck, NFC South. They just win that division, seems like, every year, some way, somehow. Even though there's always a sexier pick, they just kind of keep on keeping on. So the other part I want to mention about timeout usage, they kept them holstered, which means you didn't have that, like, the play clock's going to run out, or we didn't get a substitution right in the second half or whatever. I mean, those sorts of things add up and matter. You don't blow a timeout within the first minute of the third quarter because, no, I thought we had the 12 personnel grouping, or I thought we had, you know, Zulu or Tango or Alpha Dog. No. You get all those things right, you get to holster your timeouts. It allowed them to run the ball down close to the goal line. So, you know, you got everybody spread out. You get Rashad White in the game, not their starter. It's not Bucky Irving. And you hand it off to him, he breaks a tackle or two, gets into the end zone, but had that not worked, again, you could have called timeout. That sort of stuff, keeping your options open there, so it's not the whole world knows you're passing, pivotal for a play caller to be able to get that done. And Baker Mayfield, that escape back, that was a 4th and 10, wasn't it?
Yes.
That play, that was awesome. That was, I mean, what a winning, awesome, kick-ass play that was. That was fun.
He has completely turned his career around.
100%.
You know, now we're going into what will be year 3 of him as one of the top half of the league quarterbacks and, you know, a fringe top 10 type QB in football, night in and night out. You know, every time he's out on the field, it's a couple hundred yards and a couple passing touchdowns and makes some pretty good decisions. And he'd become a journeyman. He was bouncing all over the place after the Browns kicked him to the curb after getting them to the playoffs. But he played a game with the Rams, and he was in Carolina, remember, with Sam Darnold, and he latches on in Tampa. And they've got a good system that, even with different people coming in there, is very similar. They've got great receivers with Mike Evans, and Sterling Shepard's been really good early this year. This kid, Emeka Egbuka, their first-round pick from Ohio State, 3 touchdowns in 2 weeks. I like their tight end, Cade Otton. Bucky Irving's a baller. Their running back, who we saw in the playoffs last year. Nobody forced more missed tackles in the rookie class last season than he did. He ran for 71 yards for a pop. But good win for them. They're 2-0, a game up on Atlanta in the South. And then in the late game, on the AFC side of the ledger, here's a team I was wrong on. I'm already ready to rule on this and slam the gavel that I disrespected the Chargers. When they lost Rashawn Slater and they suffered some of the injuries they did in the preseason, I thought both Kansas City and Denver would finish ahead of them in the division. Justin Herbert looks better than I can remember him looking. He's always had everything. I've always said there's two guys to me that I would design in a laboratory. If you can build a quarterback, body, athleticism, mobility, arm strength, arm talent, accuracy, like all this stuff.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I'd probably build someone that looks like Jordan Love, or I'd build someone that looks like Justin Herbert. Like, that's kind of my prototype in this league. And both of them, interestingly, are kind of similar guys, where the idea of them has been a little bit better than the execution of them to this point. Not to say that they haven't had some amazing moments and put up, in Justin Herbert's case, some brilliant numbers. Love had an unbelievable playoff game where they hung 50 on Dallas at one point. But just by and large, this is not like MVP caliber quarterbacking from either of them necessarily. And at some point, it feels like they could get there. Well, Herbert, 2 games in, is starting to look like he's at the peak of his powers here. And he's done it really without a running game. Led them in rushing last night with 31 yards. Those 2 touchdowns, 242 yards. Did have a bad play at the end of the game. Should have been a pick that was dropped by the Raiders, who didn't take advantage of any opportunities that they got. Keenan Allen goes back to the Chargers and is good again.
What a fit.
5 for 61 in a score for him last night. He's got a touchdown in each of their first 2 games. But the key to me for the Chargers is their defense. They hold the Raiders in the red zone to an over. They forced 3 field goals. Geno Smith looked rough last night. That was a forgettable performance.
Dreadful.
But this Chargers D coordinator, I believe, came with Harbaugh from Michigan, Jesse Minter. He should be a head coach in the next couple years. He is outstanding.
So to the Chargers, I was both right and wrong. And here's what I mean. I thought when they lost Rashawn Slater, they weren't going to be able to do the Harbaugh ball where you run the hell out of it. Doesn't matter if it's Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, you, me, Darius, Ryan Clary, Toby. They're going to run the hell out of the ball. They can't run at all. That's not hyperbolic. Their running backs get blasted in the backfield every other time they run it.
Last night, Harrison Hampton, they're 2 backs, and it's Amari and Hampton primarily, but they combined for 16. They both had 8, and they went for a total of 52 yards in the game.
With a couple guys, with a couple times they spring runs, you know, that.
Yeah, long of 15.
Yeah, you're down in, down on average. They're getting hit in the backfield every other play.
Otherwise, it was 15 for 37.
So I thought they wouldn't be able to run the ball. They wouldn't be able to do their normal stuff. So I was right about that. Here's what I underestimated, to your point. A, the defense, but B, I'll get back to it. I didn't know that Justin Herbert would ever be allowed to do this, to be the guy. I've loved him for years. The way he can sling it, the some of the throws that he makes, you go, there's probably 2 or 3 people in the league. It's him, Josh Allen, and a couple others that can fit the ball in to some of those spots. He's been outstanding through a couple weeks, slinging the ball to Quentin Johnston. You mentioned Keenan Allen is back for them. Ladd McConkey is kind of the West Coast Amon-Ra St. Brown working underneath. Their passing game is excellent. Their defense is filthy.
Yeah, it's good.
That's the story.
Don't sleep on, by the way, we've got a developing situation here with Quentin Johnston. Former first-round pick, everyone made fun of, dropped a lot of passes, has had all kinds of issues in his development. He's off to a really good start to the year. And they've kind of put him over little by little, said all the right things, built him up in the media, Harbaugh says everything about him that's positive and none of the negative stuff, but he's starting to really look like a guy that made some sense.
He gets, I think Allen's deep. Presence helped him.
Has to have. This was last night on the 60-yard touchdown. Ended up with 3 for 71 in a score.
Jacket. He talks about Matt almost with awe. Herbert launches downfield. It's Johnson in stride. Touchdown, Chargers. 60 yards.
That was Chris Fowler's evil twin, Kiss Fowler, on the call last night. Who would do a broadcast without a voice so they sound nothing like themselves?
Yeah, what kind of person goes on the air?
What kind of crazy person would gut through a head cold and try to call a football game? Silliest of geese. Fowler on ESPN as part of the nightcap call last evening. So let's talk Raiders for a second because they're about to come to Northwest Stadium.
Yep.
Geno Smith was terrible last night. That's not what Geno is, though. Geno generally, he's going to have some games like that. But he's going to have some really good ones as well. Just when you think you got Geno pegged as like, okay, move on. You need someone else. He's going to go out and complete 70% for 329 yards and 3 touchdowns. So if you let him throw to open receivers, if you give him time, he'll slice you and dice you. What I worry about with the Raiders is Brock Bowers.
Yep.
I will say last night,
he was not himself, it didn't feel like.
Compromised.
Yeah.
That he didn't practice all week. He was questionable until Sunday morning, I think it was, when we found out he was going to go. And you could tell when he was in motion, when he was running routes, he was probably like 75-80% playing anyway, big brace and you know, out there going through the motions. Quick turnaround now, short week, cross-country travel. My hope is you get that Brock Bowers, who had 5 catches for 38
yards. He can feel free
yards.
To rest up. That'd be just fine.
I bet he's going to play.
Yeah.
But 5 for 38 and, you know, not trying to take a whole lot of shots with a long of 9, I'd rather play that guy than the dude who had the third highest catch total in league history at the tight end position last year as a rookie tight end.
Yeah, that's more like, that's like a Kozlowski style stat line, right? Nothing but underneath. He's not going down the field. Nothing dynamic. That's not him. I mean, he clearly wasn't himself.
Any idea what tight end in NFL history has the most catches ever in a season by a tight end?
Tony Gonzalez?
No.
Kelsey?
No.
Gates?
Brock Bowers last year is third. Not Gates.
Okay.
Most catches ever, one season by Fannin a tight
Tharp.
End. Who?
Fannin Tharp.
No. Damn. Good guess.
Hold on, Skip. Is it someone that I haven't said yet?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Dad, you want to help him out a little bit here?
I wish I could. You guys
are going to be mad at yourselves.
I mean, the easy answer is Gronk. I guess.
No.
Jay Novacek just against Washington.
No.
Zach Ertz.
Yes.
Oh, there we go.
Zach Ertz, all-time wow. record for catches in a season by tight end.
Half of them against Washington for Philadelphia. I was just going through people that killed us.
Aside, I'm pretty sure to get to the record in the final week, he caught, I think it was 15 balls.
He had 15 catches against us.
Jim Haslett's defense.
Yeah.
And he ended up with like 115 or 118, whatever it was that year. But anyway, Bowers worries me. Crosby's just an absolute game-wrecking, world-eating assassin.
Didn't last night somehow, crazily.
No sacks, but he blew up. Constant plays,
yes.
Forced a fumble at the end of the game to get the ball back when it looked like the game was over. He's just involved. But call me crazy. I know I'm going to mention this more times this week than anyone's going to want to hear it, this whole rest thing. But getting the Raiders after you haven't played since Thursday, when they played on Monday night, and then have to fly 3,000 hours across the country. 3,000, that would be a long flight.
That'd be a long flight.
Be a really long flight.
Couple 3,000
miles,
yeah.
5 hours across the country. I would be very surprised if Washington's not in a really good spot in this ballgame with a couple minutes left. I mean, it's not like I'm disrespecting the Raiders. If you were going out there and you had just played last night and they had played on Thursday, I would say, with or without Jaden Daniels, I don't love this. This is a really, really bad situation. But even without Daniels, if and when he doesn't play, which I'm not expecting he will this weekend, a Mariota-led Washington, my opinion, should be favored in this game and should win this game.
I'm with you on that. I mean, just it always makes me nervous starting whenever we count chickens, but the point is on paper, that's correct. What you're saying is right.
What do you think of Ashton Jeanty so far? Last night, he had 2 pass pro plays where he was lost like last year's Easter egg. Then he ran into a pulling guard early in the, this is all like in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Ran into a pulling guard kind of out of sync. Then he went the wrong way when Geno turned around for a handoff and Geno had to eat it and kind of fall forward. It was just kind of a comedy of errors, and I'm going, yuck. But as the game went on, he had 3 or 4 runs where you're like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, to me, there's no question that he is a prodigious talent, that he's ridiculous. But he kind of goes to my theory, into my sort of working axiom, where teams like that shouldn't be drafting a running back right there. Like, he's awesome. He's making, you know, he catches the ball behind the line of scrimmage, makes three guys miss for 4.5 yards. Like, they're not good. They're not ready to compete just yet. That, to me, you could do that as kind of like a finishing touch on your great roster, but they needed way more than he can provide. He's awesome. There's no issue with him at all. I mean, well, let me rephrase. Maybe not knowing where to go sometimes could be an issue, but you could see the burst, the quickness, the talent, the make you miss, some of the power.
He's so hard to tackle.
Yeah.
He's got the football term that the Shanahan coaching staff used to use all the time that we would kind of do a fun little drinking game with was they called it body lean, and it's their favorite thing when a guy like falls forward. So he's got that, but also balance. Like the amount of guys that just slide off of him.
You know that's what I'm talking about in the flat where the spin move happens. You just go, okay, that's filthy.
The violence with which this game is played and how hard you're getting hit by these defenders and they just kind of slide off of you. He's got incredible balance. So you get it as a game goes on and you watch him, you go, yeah, he's going to be a 1,500-yard back a few times probably. Mm-hmm. But in the early going, he's also, I think his head's spinning a little bit. I don't know, just maybe it's the difference of the size of the playbook or whatever. But last night, they couldn't run it as much as they wanted to. There's going to be plenty of 20-plus carry games. This is not the Commanders, where they're like, oh, well, Eckler for 4, and Kroski Merritt for 3, and Chris Rodriguez for 4. You know, they're not doing this, like, three-headed thing. It's going to be the Genty show on the ground, I think. And if they have a lead or they're playing close, you're going to see him 22, 23 times in a football game. I really believe that. But great night of football.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan. But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.